I paid 260 euros for a pair of Crocs, man. Those shoes pretty much broke my foot.
It's only going downhill from here.
What up, guys? This is Josh.
And this is Fobs. And this is the Kickback Pod.
And we are back once again, the Kickback Pod. Back at it. I'm here with my man Fobs. We're back. I was, as you guys might have seen from my IG stories, I was across the world over in the Far East. I was in Japan. So I'll tell you a little bit about what it was like over there in this episode. We'll also, as usual, get into what we've been wearing, some of our latest pickups. And we have a pretty interesting topic for you guys. So both of us, we've been, you know, looking through social media, we've been scouting the streets, and we have definitely seen a couple of trends when it comes to sneakers, and that's something we want to discuss. So both of us have picked out one particular trend that we can forecast for the upcoming months in the world of sneakers, and we'll give you that as well. And yeah, but before we get into all of that, I need to know, the fans need to know, everyone wants to know, Fobs, my man, how you doing, bro?
I'm good. Happy to have you back. Excited to be doing this pod episode with someone and not solo, because it's definitely lonely out there when you're doing it all alone. But I'm enjoying Berlin summer. The weather's been great. The only downside to that has been the pollen allergies, which have really been fucking me up this year. Like, last year was bad, but this year is also very, very bad. There's some days where I don't even know if I can go outside because, like, my nose is itchy, my throat is itchy, my eyes are watering and they're itchy. I'm having trouble breathing. So yeah, if the pollen can please fuck off, that would be great. And then the rest of summer can commence.
There's a lot of people listening right now who can definitely relate. My girlfriend too. She absolutely despises this time of the year. This pollen thing is crazy, man, in Berlin. And also, what the hell is up with the weather? Why is it... It feels like sub-Saharan Africa right now in Berlin. It is so hot.
Anyone who's lived in Germany knows there's no ACs here because Germany historically has never needed them. And Germany is also, I don't want to say very because they're not, but like relatively eco-conscious. And so ACs don't really play into that.
Germans are very anti. Germans are very anti-AC. I was just having this conversation with a colleague, literally half an hour ago, about how I've met some Germans here who complain about the AC, and they say that the AC is giving them neck pain.
Oh, yes.
Can you explain
that's a
this,
thing.
Man? Like, how those two things don't even relate.
So what I mean by that's a thing is not that that happens, but that Germans complain about that is a thing. Like, they also believe that AC gives you a cold. Like, if you have... It comes from this belief that if there's a draft of wind, of air, that can give you a cold, that is what gives you a cold or gets you sick. And so they don't like to leave windows open when they sleep just in case that there's a draft of air. They don't like to have ACs because that is basically a draft of air. And it's funny because growing up in Thailand, you obviously have ACs in every single room and you pretty much have them on all day, every day if you're in those rooms because it's 35 to 45 degrees outside. But all of my German relatives and friends who visited us would have the AC on from like maybe like 5 p.m. to 7 or 8 p.m. And then they would turn it off when the room was like semi-cold and leave it off until the next morning. And I guess it worked, right? I don't know. I don't know if they worked up a sweat or anything in their sleep. But it comes from a belief deep down in some sort of corner of German culture that ACs make you sick, which is a total myth. It's a total myth. And it's something that I'm always arguing with my wife and relatives about, because I grew up in a country where, like I said, you have it on all the time. So yeah, it's a problem that us non-100% Germans face everywhere, you know, at your workplace when you like want to turn the AC on or open a window, and then somebody will be like, oh, I'm sitting right next to the window, I might get a cold because there's a draft. It's all a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, ACs and credit cards, the two mortal enemies of Germans.
That's true. That's true.
Let's get into what's going on in the sneaker world. There's been a lot of news we got to get into. First one, real quick. We had finally, after almost a half a year hiatus, we had a Yeezy day. We had a shitload of Yeezys drop on the Confirmed app. I hit on a few. You also hit on a pair of foams. And, well, definitely the whole, you know, hype cycle with Yeezy is definitely past its peak. And a lot of people are just over the brand, over Kanye. But as a sneakerhead, as a neutral sneakerhead, I have to say it was pretty nice to see a bunch of Yeezys again available for sale. It was nice to finally open up the Confirmed app and for the Confirmed app to be useful again and to have, you know, actually hype sneakers show up on the app. So that was nice to see. And it was also pretty cool how they restocked some all-time classics like the Pirate Blacks, which I was able to hit, but in like a really small size. So I don't consider that really hitting on it. But yeah, what did you feel about seeing Yeezy Day back?
Honestly, I was quite indifferent because, as I've said on this episode a few times, like, I'm pretty much done with Kanye and done with the products because I feel like they represent him. Although I can understand people that have some sort of emotional connection to them. Obviously, there's also emotional connections for me to certain products from the Yeezy line, such as the 350s, the Turtle Doves, and the OG 750s, both of which I got when they first released. But have since sold. Then, you know, the Wave Runner 700s, great shoe, probably one of the best Yeezys or just shoes in general ever. But yeah, I mean, it passed me by a little bit. I was on the Confirmed app and I was like browsing through just trying to see what was available. And just out of like curiosity to see how high stock volumes are, because I never used to win on Confirmed, right? Like, I was never picked. So I was like, okay, like, I think if I sign up for one and I don't get one, then maybe it was relatively limited. I just wanted to see how much stock was actually behind all of these colorways. So I signed up for one raffle, which was the Foam Runner, and I actually surprisingly got it, which I was not expecting. So that leads me to believe that stock was higher than people thought. Also because I find it an interesting discussion, because this is like the rest of the stock that they have, right? I don't believe that they're going to be releasing new shoes without Yeezy, right?
No, I don't think they will.
So does that mean that resale prices are going to spike for all Yeezys that have ever been released? What about these latest Yeezys, you know?
No, I don't think so, because like you said, you know, people are just kind of over Kanye as a person. Like, exactly. he doesn't demand that type of hype that he used to. Although, even with that being said, it's not like the Yeezys were sitting on Yeezy Day. They all sold out, right? So there clearly still is demand for the shoe. But if you look at resale prices of most of these sneakers that are released on that day, most of them are going for barely above retail. So yeah, demand is not what it once was. So I think that has a lot to do with the direction Kanye has taken. But I still think it was pretty cool to see it. So let's move on to the next topic. So we got a new Action Bronson colorway on the 990 V6. They're calling this the Lapis Lazuli. I have no idea what that means. But in my opinion, early contender for sneaker of the year right here. The Lapis Lazulis. The first colorway that dropped. The first colorway that dropped, you know, it was a nice shoe, but it was very polarizing. Personally, I wouldn't want to wear it because it's just a bit, the colors are just a bit too loud for me. But this pair, love the color blocking, love the colorway, the navy, the purple, the black, the yellow midsole. I think it just comes together very nice. And at least for me, I would rank that number one right now for sneaker of the year. What is your opinion?
I find that wild. I mean, interesting, and everyone is, you know, entitled to their opinion. I just don't think that a shoe that, or a collaboration on the 990 V6 can be shoe of the year. Because
I just really don't like that shoe.
It's not that I don't like it. I'm just like so unconvinced by it. And I haven't seen one in person yet. And I have said in the past that it is growing on me a little bit because I was very quick to rush to judgment. And at times, and in certain colorways, it still does look a little bit like a Skechers shape up to me. just because it's got that like rounded sole. But then there's other like product shots or shots that I see on Instagram where I'm like, okay, maybe they're not that bad. So it's just, it's a difficult silhouette for me. And then like you said, the colorway is beautiful. It's a very, very nice colorway. Probably not my favorite of the three, but it is nice. I prefer the third colorway. So not the original one, but the other one. But yeah, I don't know. For me, it's a good, decent shoe, good collaboration. Love Action Bronson and his whole, not persona, but his whole character, right? And his personality. But yeah, it would be a stretch, at least for me, to put it anywhere near the top five. But I respect you putting it there.
I am a fan of the 990 V6. I completely turned around after actually wearing them on feet. I love the comfort on them. And I like the shape of them as well. So, and I think Action has done a great job putting very unconventional colorways on it, and the results I think are great. And I really, really like these. But let's move on to the most surprising news of the year, maybe, or one of the most surprising bits of news, and that is we have the return of the Nike Roshe Run, the shoe that, it's okay, maybe saying dominated is a bit of a stretch, but it was one of the most popular shoes in around 2012, 2013, around that time. And it was somewhat of a meme also back then. And now Nike has decided to bring them back. It's supposed to be coming back in September of this year. Personally, when I read this news, I actually thought it was some kind of, you know, trolling account
April that was 1st, posting it. April yeah, yeah, Fools yeah. or something.
I thought it was a troll because, you know, we recently heard this news about Nike doing some major changes to their front office, switching up the C-level, putting them in different jobs, just to shake up their current roster of sneakers that they felt really needed, you know, a little jolt of energy and some new models are coming out. And after hearing all that, we hear, okay, they're going to bring back the Roshes, which I'm going to say it right now, I absolutely hate the Roshes. So the Roshes for me are like a top five ugliest shoe ever. Like you'll never ever see me ever putting any colorway. Oh, even if it's like a hyped collab, I don't care. I'm not putting the Roshes on my feet. So I'm absolutely not hyped at all about these coming back. But what did you think of this news?
You copped the shoe that was inspired by the Roshe.
Which is what?
The Yeezy.
Oh, the 350. But that's just a way better shoe, man. Come on. That's you can't even compare those. It's a way nicer shoe.
No, I agree, but I would say that the Foam Runner, not the Foam Runner, the Roshe Run did have the entire sneaker community in a chokehold back when it first dropped. I remember I had more than a couple of colorways. And there were some pretty decent ones. And I think the beauty of the Roshe was that it was a very comfortable sneaker, but it didn't have crazy technology. It was just very soft EVA foam for the midsole. And so maybe the quality wasn't the best, but it was incredibly comfortable. You could wear it with or without socks. I often went without socks. And I know that's sacrilegious among some sneakerheads, but they were just so comfortable, so simple. And I think that was the beauty of it, that it was an affordable shoe with a relatively, at least at the time, right now that so many colorways have come out and it was kind of run into the ground, this would not be the case anymore. But it was a relatively fashion forward design in that it was so simple. It was not even aggressive, but just like, it looked fast. It looked like it was like pointed forward. It had a good toe shape. It was a knitted upper. And then later on, you had different materials on the upper as well. I'm sure there was like a mid or a high as well at some point. And I don't know. I'm not saying that I'm going to buy a pair if they come back, because they have become the symbol for like, holy shit, what the hell was I thinking back then? It's really like, it's almost a symbol, not for like, you know, making fun of other people, but almost making fun of yourself, because we've all had them. So I wouldn't buy a pair, but I am intrigued to see how people respond to them if they come back. It is, in my opinion, a weird decision to retro it. It's almost like Adidas' decision to retro the NMD. Like, the NMD was huge for a time too. And you could argue that the NMD was developed to kill the Roshi a little bit. It looks very, very similar, apart from that it has like a Boost midsole with some like knobs on it, right? But it was weird that Adidas retroed that so soon after, and it feels weird that they're retroing, Nike's retroing the Roshi run so soon after. It feels like the silhouette hasn't had time to like fully die and then come back to life, if you know what I mean. Like, maybe if they brought it back in 15 years and all the old heads were like, oh, I used to wear this and it used to be a meme, but like the younger generation is wearing it. Like maybe like Lenny when he's 15 and he's running around wearing Roshi runs and I'm like, oh, I used to wear those. Those weren't cool for a very long time. That would make more sense than bringing it back so soon after, where the same people that wore it are still very deep into the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. That was some of the reaction I saw online. Like, people were just like, I think this shoe had its time and it's just too soon to bring it back. And yeah, I know a lot of other shoes were inspired by it. Personally, I know that the 350 V1 was inspired by it. I personally like the V2s better anyways. They look better to me. But the Roshi, though, it's just, if I start seeing TikTok videos, you know, like how to style Roshis and people rocking the pin roll jeans with the Roshis, if I see that, I'm deleting TikTok, man.
Don't hate on the pin roll.
I'm deleting TikTok for life if I see that. But yeah, man, a lot of interesting news in the sneaker world. Let's move on to our listener of the week this week. That is Julian, whose Instagram handle is Kicks of Jew. So shout out to you, Julian, for always listening and giving us feedback on the pod. Appreciate you. And let's move on now to what we have been wearing. So I can go first. I was in Japan for a couple of weeks, and I only took two shoes with me because I actually expected to buy quite a few shoes there, but I'll get into that a little bit later. What I chose to take on the trip, so first of all, was a pair of New Balance 860 V2 in the black colorway. This was just a general release pair. And the reason I bought this pair, honestly, was I'm like, I haven't seen Berlin in a shoe in so long, and this shoe just kind of reminded me of Berlin. It was like super black, like shiny black. It had like little streaks of silver on it. It looked like a vintage running shoe. It was just something that I knew the streets of Berlin would be full of this shoe, and I was right, because I came back 2 weeks later back to Germany. I looked on every website trying to find the shoe again, and it sold out everywhere, pretty much. The black colorway specifically, it sold out everywhere, which I am not surprised at all. And yeah, I took that on the trip. Great pair, very comfortable. It's got the same midsole as the 2002s and the 1906. So if you guys are used to that type of comfort, expect the same. I like the 860 silhouette in general a lot. So I was just waiting for a good colorway to release before copying, and this was it for me. I didn't really like the Aimé Leon Dore collab, so yeah, this was the first pair. And the second pair I took on the trip was, wow, so this is actually, for how long I've been doing sneakers, this is actually the first pair of Asics I have ever owned personally, and that was the Asics Gel 1130 collab with Hall Studios. And this colorway is so nice. The brown tones and the green and the hit of orange. It was inspired by Japanese forests and Shinto shrines, which was another reason why it was the perfect shoe to take to Japan. I was walking around in nature in some parts of Japan wearing that shoe, and I felt like it just kind of belonged there. It was just really, really nice to look at. And yeah, I got some compliments on the shoe as well while I was there. And yeah, what I have to say, wearing the shoe is, wow, I have been really sleeping on Asics comfort, because the comfort level on this shoe was unreal. Like, definitely, I thought it was way more comfortable than my 860 pair that I took with me. Just really nice and cushiony feeling on the feet. And it turns out that this Asics 1130 model, the regular retail price is, I believe, only 100 euros, which for a 100 euro shoe, comfort like this, yeah, I don't think there's any other 100 euro shoe that is this comfortable. So I was very, very pleased with that, and I'm looking to definitely cop a lot more Asics this year.
The 1130 is also coming out as a special, I don't know if it's a Kith collaboration, but Kith is releasing two colorways, or two colorways of the 1130 and the, I believe it's the Gel Cayano 14, pretty soon. They've been teased on Instagram already by Ronnie and some of his crew, so that might be one worth looking out for. I think it's more of a exclusive colorway that will be available exclusively through Kith stores and online channels rather than an actual collaboration. It looks super nice, and I mean, in general, there's a lot of really, really nice 1130 colorways out there, so definitely a good shoe to check out, not just the collaborations but the general releases. In terms of what I've been wearing, it's actually also an ASICS. It's the Denim Tears collaboration on the ASICS Gel MC Plus, and I mean, you've already said it, but these are incredibly comfortable. Also, it's a shoe that I find flew under the radar a little bit, not just the collaboration, but the silhouette in general. You don't really hear people talking about it. And what I really liked about this project was I'm a sucker for storytelling. And Denim Tears, so Tremaine Emery, he brought out two colorways of this silhouette that were inspired by the dusty clay roads of his, I believe, grandfather's house in South Georgia. And it was the clay that got stuck on his shoes, on his clothes when he's outside playing, that served as the basis for these colorways. The one colorway is white with like a dusty orange effect, and the other one is orange with a like a pre-aged kind of midsole. I have the orange pair, and very, very beautiful shoes, very comfortable. And again, it's something that not everybody has, not everybody knows released, knows that it was released when it was. So it's one of those shoes that you can kind of wear knowing it's not super hype, but people are going to be like, huh, like, what is that? I've never seen that before. And that's kind of what I've been going for recently. So these have been on my feet a lot.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, I think you and me are definitely going to be big proponents of ASICS for the rest of the year, because actually, moving on to our pickups for this week, one of the shoes that I did pick up was another pair of ASICS. That was the Gel Cayano 14 in the cream and black colorway, and it's a general release pair, which after looking at these Kith Gel Cayano 14s, it literally looks like the exact same shoe.
Yeah, right. So, ASICS does a lot of that where like the colorways are very similar.
Yeah, yeah. So it's basically a non-Kith version of the shoe, and I was able to get it for retail, which I was happy about. And yeah, I definitely really wanted this because it reminded me so much of that Jound black colorway, which I really liked, which I wasn't able to get, obviously. And yeah, this pair is just so nice, so comfortable. I'm definitely going to be doing a review of this pair at some point on my channel next week, so watch out for that. So yeah, after not buying ASICS at all for many years, I've already bought two now in the span of 2 months, and pretty happy with them. And the other pickup was one of the Yeezys from Yeezy Day that released for the first time. It was the Yeezy 350 V2 Carbon Beluga, which when I dropped the video for this, there were people saying that this colorway was closer to the original Beluga colorway than that reflective version, which dropped a couple of years ago. That version, it was a bit light in color compared to what the OGs look like, and a lot of people were saying they really like this newer colorway, which is more of like an olive colorway with that orange stripe. And I think Beluga, that whole color scheme just looks amazing on the 350 V2s, and I think this model, it's a bit under the radar because it's not reselling for much, but I think it's definitely a pretty good, a pretty nice looking Yeezy 350. What about you? What have you picked up?
So I actually picked up a pair of Reese Cooper Morel 1 TRL Hydro Runners on sale at Beeston, and I was actually surprised to find them there because it's a shoe that I've had my eye on since they were teased at Fashion Week over a year ago. I believe almost 2 years ago at this point, maybe 18 months. And I kept wondering when they were going to release. I think they were supposed to be a spring-summer shoe last year. I don't know, but they got delayed. And then I was randomly browsing the Beeston sale, looking for, you know, like most of the time I'm browsing these sales and I'll open up like 20 tabs of things that I want and then buy none. But this time, like that was one. Yeah, right. I feel like a lot of people do that. But this was one of the tabs that I opened this time. And because I had wanted them for so long and they were on sale, I was like, yeah, fuck it. It's a no-brainer. So I got those, super happy with them. And then I was also gifted a pair of the High Snobiety Saucony Pro Grid Triumph 4s. I was given the cream colorway, which was exclusive to High Snob's own store.
Oh, those super are nice so shoe. Nice, man. Those the are so High good. The cream ones, the cream High Snobiety yeah. Saucony joints. Yeah, I've been. Did those sell out, by the way, man? Like, they, you guys should have
not in all sizes. Not in all sizes.
Yeah, those are.
They're
those
still are so online nice. On High Snobiety if you want to check them out. But they're actually pretty dope. I'm a big fan of the comfort of Saucony Pro Grid shoes, and they've got that 2000s runner vibe, which is trending hard right now. But we will talk about that later on in this episode. That's why I don't want to dive too deep into these. Just know they're super nice. They dropped in two colorways, and both colorways are actually pretty decently available online if you missed out or forgot about them. So definitely check those out.
Very, very nice, man. So pretty good pickups. So, as you guys know, in my last couple of weeks, I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a Japan breakdown, since a lot of you guys were asking. And just so you know, by the way, I did on one of my last days there, I realized I didn't record any footage of the trip. So I asked you before.
I was like, yo, are you gonna like make videos? And you're like, maybe.
So on like one of my last days there, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna like, I didn't really have anything on our like agenda for that day. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna just do like a full filming day today. So I just literally went into every sneaker shop that I, all my favorite sneaker shops while I was there, and just recorded it. And I'm gonna be dropping like where to sneaker shop video in Tokyo, like the best places to sneaker shop. Actually, one of the places I went to, which was Sneakers and Stuff, the Tokyo location, which is a beautiful location, by the way. I just checked my inbox a couple of days ago, and Sneakers and Stuff sent out a message that they're closing the Tokyo location. So
what?
My video is going to be a bit outdated, but but anyways, like, absolutely incredible, amazing country. Like, Japan, for me, my favorite country in the world. It was my second time actually visiting, except the only difference is this time I actually had some money to spend. So the first time I visited, I wasn't really shopping all that much because, yeah, I was kind of broke back then. So this time it was a way better trip. So, yeah, I had an amazing time. I absolutely love that place. The people are just so kind and so respectful. Like, Japanese people are just a whole different league of kindness, you know? Like, they're just some of the nicest people. And, of course, I did a ton of shopping there. I'll just leave that for the video as far as, like, most of the stores I went to. It's definitely a country where if you love vintage shopping, oh my God, like, it is incredible. And that is because Japanese vintage shops have one of the highest standards of quality. So you won't find, you know, t-shirts in there with armpit stains and everything you find in there is like, it looks like it's barely worn. It looks like in perfect condition. And as you guys know, some of the biggest streetwear brands are all from Japan. So it's very, very common to go to a Japanese vintage shop and you'll find just, you know, people letting go of their old Capital or Izzy Miyake stuff, underground, neighborhood, undercover, I meant, not underground, undercover, neighborhood.
Underground is a decent name for a brand, though.
True. Needles, you know, Beams, all this stuff. Like, you'll just find it in the vintage shops, and I was just going absolutely crazy, like stopping at every vintage shop. Anytime I found something that fit me, I was so excited. Bought a bunch of stuff. Just from vintage shopping, I found some Capital stuff, plenty of needles, Needles is like one of my favorite brands to wear, so that was amazing. Of course, Beams, like buying Beams and buying all these brands in Japan is so much cheaper than buying it in Europe. It's ridiculous. Like all the Needles stuff, I actually went to like a Needles retailer, and literally the same stuff that's currently on, for example, End Clothing or some European retailers that sell Needles, it's like half the price over there in Japan. So I took advantage of that. I got myself, you know, some shirts, some, I got a Needles tracksuit as well. And yeah, man, like by the end of the trip, I actually had to buy a whole new suitcase to bring back with me because
Rimowa suitcase, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course, man. Rimowa, sure.
I have two questions though. So yeah, sure. When you say vintage shopping, is it more like secondhand or is it true vintage, like old shit? Because and I don't know, maybe my definition for vintage is wrong, right? But when I think vintage, I'm thinking like stuff from the 90s, the early 2000s, the 80s.
No, it's more like, okay, in that case, it's not really vintage, it's more like secondhand. So it's like stuff from maybe two seasons ago, three seasons ago.
Okay.
For these brands.
And what are the prices like there for that kind of stuff? Like, is it more like secondhand? Because you're saying that the quality of these is great, right? So
yeah,
either somebody took really great care of it or they only wore it a couple times. So how far below retail are we talking about for these kinds of things? Or below resale, I should say, because some of this stuff is probably on resale platforms as well.
Yeah, right. So the answer to that is it totally depends where you go, right? So these are some pro tips in case you guys are planning on visiting. Tokyo is by far the most expensive place to do this type of shopping. But within Tokyo itself, depending on what district you are in, the prices vary greatly. So I would say by far the best area to vintage shop in Tokyo is this place called Shimokitazawa, which is a little bit outside of central Tokyo, but trust me, it's definitely worth going there. It's like the same shops will have locations in Shimokitazawa that are just way cheaper than like Harajuku or Shibuya. So you're just saving a lot more money. I spent one day in Shimokitazawa. I came out of there with like three bags full of stuff. I found like the best find was this Kith and BMW shirt, which is like one of my grail shirts. It had like the red E30, which is like my favorite car maybe ever, and it had that on the front. So I was, and it was like such a nice fade too, so I was super happy to find that. But as far as prices go, so yeah, I would say if you're in the Shimokitazawa area, or if you're in Osaka, which is way cheaper than Tokyo, the prices are like probably half the retail price in most cases.
Oh, wow. That's really good then for this kind of stuff you're finding and the kind of brands as well that you mentioned.
Yeah, because definitely.
That's decent.
Like the Capital shirt that I found in Osaka, I paid like the retail price of that was close to like 250, 300 euros, and I paid around 125 for it, which was pretty good. And same with, like I also bought this Beams overshirt, which I paid around 20 something euros for, and the retail was over 100. So I got some pretty good steals in there. And yeah, like you said, a lot of the stuff does have resale value, so they'll be selling it for over retail at these places as well, but it'll still be much less than the resale price on StockX, right?
Right, so, that makes sense. What about sizing? Because you mentioned that whenever you found something in your size, you got really excited. So I assume that it was, I mean, you're a tall dude, so I assume it was difficult, right? But like, what about us normal people that aren't 2 meters tall?
Tall dude is an understatement. I think Japanese people thought Godzilla was back when they saw me. Like I think I was the biggest guy in Tokyo walking around. Like I would be in Harajuku and I could see like a kilometer straight ahead of me. You know, there was like nobody at my height level. Like I was by far the biggest guy there, and for that reason, it is a bit of a challenge to do shopping there if you're a bit tall. And this is the reason why I actually didn't find a single pair of sneakers while I was there. There's no big sizes anywhere. And I'm not even talking about like at the vintage shops, which is because that's kind of expected. Japanese people aren't that big. So you won't find big sizes at vintage shops at all. You'd be very lucky to. But even like going to, I went to Atmos, for example, right? And they just didn't have my size. I asked them for a couple of shoes and they were just like, no, big sizes? Like, oh, good luck, you know? They were just, you know, like nothing above size 10 pretty much exists there anywhere. So that it's tough. If you have big feet, not a place to go shopping. Otherwise, if you're like below 6 feet, I think, yeah, you'll be able to find whatever you need.
Nice. What about, let's talk a little bit about the food, because that's something we talked about before you went.
The food, man. Oh my God. Okay. Favorite restaurant by far. There's this place called Katsudon Zuicho, and it's just this complete hole in the wall place that has three nice Japanese women working there behind the counter. It has like 6 seats total, and all they have is one thing on the menu, which is katsu, pork katsu with omelet and with rice. And that's it. They only have one thing on the menu. You walk in, they only ask you one question. What size do you want? Small, medium, large. That's it. and based on that, they give you your portion. And it is so good. Like, oh my God. And of course, like, that was just my favorite thing I ate there. But of course, like the ramen, like we went into just so many ramen joints, and it's just like the most delicious, you know, umami in your mouth flavor. Oh my God. Like the food, I ate like an absolute king, man. And coming back to Germany was hard, especially when it comes to the food. I miss it.
Damn. What about 7-Eleven? You find anything crazy in there that you ate or copped?
Yeah. I would say, okay, 7-Eleven. So these things are called convenis in Japan. So there's 7-Eleven, there's Family Mart, there's Lawson. And I was eating breakfast there every morning. The Lawson egg sandwich, I fucking swear by it. The egg salad sandwich is incredible. That was my breakfast every day with and also a can of Black's coffee, which everyone's got to try. But the coolest thing, actually the one thing that I found super useful there, there's like this little can. There's like a picture of like a ginger and turmeric on it, and if you translate it to English, it says like turmeric turtle. That's what the Google Translate showed me. But it's a super tiny can that you're supposed to drink right before you drink alcohol, right? And there were a lot of nights on the trip where me and my girl just, you know, we went on absolute benders, as you like to call it. Like we were just, you know.
Because you were dog free, right? You left your dog in Berlin.
Yeah, so
you're
like,
time to get wasted.
Oh yeah, there were so many nights where we were like absolutely wasted. But all of these nights, we woke up the next day not feeling a thing, like zero hangover, zero. And that's all because of this one drink that they sell at 7-Eleven called Turmeric Turtle. And I brought back like 4 of them with me to Berlin, of course. Yeah, so whatever I don't even know what they put in there, but it definitely prevents hangovers. So I recommend that to everyone.
Interesting. What else? Yeah. Like, is there anything else you want to add about Japan?
I would just say, you know, everyone should just check it out, because it's just so different than any place you'll visit. Like everything from the way, you know, society just kind of functions there. Like everything's so orderly. The people are just abnormally nice. And also, you know, I kind of just get motivated being there, because I get motivated to, you know, dress better, because like people are just dressed so cool over there, you know, like even and like we're talking about sneakers, of course, like everyone had Heat, man. Like if you walk around Tokyo, everyone is rocking some Heat. The amount of like Tiffany Air Force Ones I saw were insane, you know, like Travis Scott, Jordan ones. I saw people wearing the Dior ones. You know, it's kind of like crazy. And even like people who don't seem to be like that into sneakers, like people just on the trains, I would see some crazy Asics colorways and New Balance colorways on the train. Actually, I didn't expect to see how popular New Balance was in Tokyo and in Japan in general. New Balance is super popular there, especially the 990s. Yeah, so I mean, definitely, if you're into sneakers and streetwear at all, it is like pretty much a paradise. So I would definitely suggest you guys check it out. Cannot wait to go back. I want to go back next year.
Yeah, I went in 2019, I think it was, and I am itching to go back for sure. And hearing you talk about it has made that itch a little bit more itchy. But let's talk about the trends that we have brought to the table. So I will kick us off, and I am going to be talking about 2000s runners.
Yes.
What are 2000s runners? First of all, they are back. And there's a couple ways, in my opinion, to define what a 2000s runner is. I mean, the very obvious definition is that any running shoe or, you know, performance workout shoe that was released in the 2000s, so that's from 2000 until 2010, is a 2000s runner. But there are also shoes that have been released recently that have the 2000s runner vibe, but are new sneakers or new interpretations of old sneakers. And so they would technically not be considered 2000s runners, but they have that vibe. And what I'm talking about there is what makes a 2000s runner a thing is, in my opinion, the first thing that you need to look out for is big hole mesh, right? So any of these shoes that have got not the tiny, very, very fine mesh that we've seen on a lot of shoes over the last 5 to 10 years. I'm not talking about Ultra Boost mesh. I'm not talking about 990 V3, V4, V5 mesh. I'm talking about big hole, sporty looking, performance looking mesh. So that's a big giveaway. Then, of course, there's a lot of like overlays on the upper. They're very busy. They use a lot of synthetics mixed with leather as well, or synthetic leather, because back in the 2000s, kind of what defined that era was it was an era of innovation. A lot of brands were kind of stagnating with their performance innovation, and they were really pushing, you know, new millennium. They really wanted to show what they had. And so they were going with, you know, crazy designs. Nike Shox was released in that time. And I mean, 2015 doesn't really count, 2014, but you know, it was the era just before Boost. It was when brands were really looking to separate themselves from the pack, also visually. And so these 2000 runners, they look very aggressive. They look very sporty, very quick. They look kind of retro-futuristic in a way. They've got a lot of metallic overlays. That's also the colorways that come into play. There's a lot of like sporty hits of red and blue, like deeper blues. So it's very like sports-focused, very performance-focused. Some shoes that are examples of 2000s runners are the Nike Presto, which was released in 2000. That is the ultimate kind of symbol for innovation, because the Presto was part of Nike's HTM project, and HTM stands for Hiroshi, Tinker, and Mark, which are Hiroshi Fujiwara, Tinker Hatfield, and Mark Parker. And those three basically combined to really look at what they could do in pushing the boundaries of innovation and stuff like that. And so a lot of shoes were released under that HTM moniker that became very, very limited and very sought after. And the Presto was one of those. Then the Kobe Crazy 1, technically not a runner, but a basketball shoe. And if you look at that, you can definitely see the 2000s influence there. It looks like a spaceship. It's got this like bulbous kind of foam outer layer that almost hides the shoe. You've got the Gel Kayano 14, which we've talked about in the past and also on this episode, that has the big hole mesh base and then the metallic synthetic overlays. The New Balance 2002R was technically released at the end of the 2000s. And back then it was kind of supposed to be a premium runner for CEOs. So it was supposed to be a super expensive high-end running shoe. The Saucony ProGrid Triumph 4 is another good example. So is the Omni 9 from Saucony. These are all shoes that have like very performance-related tooling, midsoles. They look very, like I said, very fast. The Adidas Supernova or the Cushion Supernova or the Response CL are also shoes. And then probably the biggest one right now is the Nike Zoom Vomero 5, which was released in 2010. So again, also on the tail end. But if you look at that shoe, you can see what I'm talking about. It's got the overlays. It's got the big hole mesh. It's got the sporty vibes. And now these shoes are coming back as lifestyle shoes. So why are these shoes so popular right now? Well, fashion and all trends are cyclical, right? And maybe 5 years ago, 90 sneakers were what was kind of influencing and inspiring designers, and 90 sneakers were being brought back. Now it's time for the 2000s. It always kind of, probably next decade, we're going to get sneakers from the 2010s coming back. So the Roshis, the NMDs, although those, again, have already been retroed. But you know what I mean? So everything kind of runs in cycles. And now is about the time where 2000s runners, it's their turn to come back. It's their turn to be pushed, to be brought into the spotlight, to have marketing campaign money thrown at them. And obviously, anyone who follows fashion will know that Y2K style is super in right now. If you see any kids under the age of 18 walking around your city, chances are they're wearing low-rise jeans, hugging the hips. They've got like crop tops on. They're wearing like super crazy metallic items. And you're probably thinking, if you're our age, oh, yo, damn, that's like what we used to wear back in the day, right?
For real, man. It's been weird, man. Like, it's been weird how old I've been feeling lately, just looking at like what these teenagers have been wearing, because that's literally what I wore in high school, man. Like the more like baggier pants. I look at the girls and I see them wearing like the Juicy Couture tracksuits. Like, that's what every girl used to wear back in the day.
Exactly. Oh, it's, man, almost like
we sound like a bunch of old heads now.
I mean, bro, we're the wrong side of 30 technically. And I mean, old doesn't necessarily mean bad, but like in relation to these kids that I live near a lot of schools. And so I'll see kids in the mornings on their way to school or in the afternoon on their way home. And I'm like, damn, like those jeans or that brand, like Evisu is back in, right? JNCO, I don't know how to pronounce it. Jeanco is back in. Like these brands that used to be cool and then were memed to death are now cool again. And that's like the whole curve that fashion runs on. It's all cyclical. And so because Y2K is so in right now, 2000s runners are an obvious complement to that. So brands are going to be pushing that because sneakers is where they make big money. And when people are wearing Y2K styles, they want shoes that look good with those styles. Maybe Jordans are a bad reference, but like they're not going to wear 70s inspired runners with these 2000s outfits, right? They're going to need that like technology, that aesthetic that fits from head to toe. And so that's why 2000s runners are having a moment right now. In terms of where we are on the trend curve of 2000s runners hype, that's a difficult one to predict. I would say that we're just at the start. It's something that has been bubbling for a while, and certain brands have been releasing 2000s inspired silhouettes for quite some time now. Adidas is actually one of them. They have been releasing shoes from that era, or shoes that have been designed to look like they're from that era, for the better part of a year and a half, maybe even 2 years now. But it's only now that people are catching on. It's only now that these shoes are really gaining the hype and becoming sought after and are getting the limelight on social media. And so I think that this trend definitely has some ways to run. I would be surprised if 2000s runners weren't bigger than they are now this time next year. I think that there's still a lot of potential there. There's a lot of unexplored silhouettes, a lot of unexplored brands. Even brands that were hot in the 2000s are now making a comeback. So it's definitely an exciting time if you're into that aesthetic, into these kinds of sneakers. And if you had a favorite sneaker from back in the 2000s, who knows, maybe it'll be retroed and brought back again in the coming months or years. I'm going to ask you your opinion in a second, but I would say that I'm a big fan of this trend from the footwear side, because I love these shoes, right? I love the Vomero. I love the Giacayano 14. I love the Adidas Supernova and the Cushion CL. Those are all great shoes. I would say that I'm probably not a huge fan of the Y2K vibes and like that whole, like the hairstyles, the makeup, the actual textile fashion, but the shoes I really fuck with. But what about you?
I'm a huge fan of this trend coming back when it comes to the sneakers, like you said. Mainly because it's so cool that the trending sneakers right now are also super comfortable, man. Like, you know, like back when the Jordan 1s were the most hype sneaker around, Yeah, you know what? Jordan 1s aren't that comfortable. So it was cool to wear them. But yeah, my feet were definitely killing me at the end of the day. But with these shoes, you know, Gelcayano 14, the Vomero 5s, man, like the Prestos. Of course, I'm super happy that they're back in the trend cycle, because now I can look cool, look trendy, and be comfortable as hell, man. So definitely, I'm pretty happy about it. And also, nice. I am a fan of the Y2K fashion coming back, man. Because I don't know, it's kind of having the opposite effect on me, where like I'm starting to feel young again because I'm like. I'm like, man, yeah, I used to rock those. Maybe I should pull those back out.
I don't think I have anything from that era that either fits me or is still wearable. But I'd love to see you in some of these Y2K fits that I've been seeing.
I did actually go to I went to the Ivisu factory store in Tokyo, and it was so crazy to see the guy who worked there. He was just, you know, he had a pair of jeans in front of him, and he was just painting those seagull logos by hand on the jeans. And you could buy whatever jean you want from the shop and get it painted in whatever color and whatever customization you wanted. They do it for you on the spot by hand, which I thought was just sick. So cool. Yeah. Unfortunately, once again, I was in that store for an hour. I tried on maybe 6 pairs of jeans. None of them fit me. Of course.
Damn.
That's the problem with being tall in Japan. But yeah, so for my trend cycle, part of it kind of goes in hand with yours, but my trend cycle is, I've been noticing that, are we coming towards the end of the New Balance hype cycle? So we know that, you know, trend cycles come and go. Over the last 3 years, I think it goes without saying, New Balance has been dominating the charts, dominating sneakerheads' closets, and dominating StockX resale prices. But it seems like the brand is, or maybe they're not really struggling financially, but it seems like definitely they're losing a bit of that hype. And there's many signs that have me thinking that. So for one thing, I think consumers feel that maybe a lot of the shoes are just priced a bit too high right now. We already know it's a very tough economy out there. There's a shitload of job losses happening, especially in the States. And every single nice New Balance sneaker is north of $200, most of them. The 990 series, that Made in USA entire collection, everything's over $200, which is just a lot of money to be spending on a shoe. And even here in Europe, what they've been doing is they've been gradually increasing the prices of a lot of their models. For example, the 550, it used to be 130 euros when they first came out, actually 120. Now they go for 170, which is crazy in my opinion. Like, that's way too much for the 550s. Those are not 170 euro shoe in my opinion. And yeah, a lot of these other shoes too, like they raised the price on the 2002s, the 1906, and it's not like these shoes have new tech. We're talking about tech from the early 2000s, and they're going for almost $200. And I think consumers are just a bit fatigued by the high prices, and it's getting to the point where like you really got to pick and choose which pair of New Balances you want. You can't have them all because they're just very expensive. And also, something else that I've noticed is that the ideas are starting to just feel a bit repetitive, you know? Personally, I don't like what they did with the whole protection pack idea, you know? It looked great on the 2002 Rs, and that shoe had its moment. It was even called Sneaker of the Year by myself, and it deserved it. I don't like that they've taken that concept and put it on so many other shoes. They've put it on the 1906, and they've also put it on some other models. And it's just that concept is just starting to feel a bit tired now. It's even gotten to the point where these protection pack sneakers don't even sell out. The 1906s, they haven't sold out in most of the colorways, the protection pack. And even some of the newer 2002s that have come out in that protection pack style have not been selling out. So, I think that speaks volumes for a shoe that was just so hyped 3 years ago to not even selling out now, going on sale in some places. That's also a sign for me that, yeah, the hype cycle is kind of ending. And also some of their newer models that they've tried to push this year, it's clear that New Balance is trying to put a focus on the 610 this year, that hiking style shoe. There have been some pretty hyped collabs with Bodega, with Joe Fresh Goods. And both those collabs, they didn't sell out. I mean, the Joe Fresh Goods pair, it went, I saw it go on sale pretty much everywhere, like 50% off in some places. And yeah, now there's this upcoming colorway with Anime, which the rapper, and I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of his name, but that pair, I don't know if that's that seems like it's a hit or miss type of shoe. So even the new models don't seem to be really striking a chord with customers. And also the last point that I've noticed is that in the past they've had these collaborators who have been, I like to call them heavy hitters, you know, they're consistent with how good the collabs have been. For example, ALD was one of them. And ALD collabs for me recently, they've had a lot of misses. Like the 860s, you can already look at, you know, the resale prices of those pairs, the blue pair and the red pair are pretty much going for retail right now. Then the 1906, for me, the ALD collab was, it looked just like a regular pair of 1906s, you know, there was nothing special with that pair. And that one too, you know, it didn't really resell for much. And then even some other heavy hitters that they've had in the past, like Salehe Bembury. Now, in his case, he put out that V2, 990 V2, which I thought was incredible, like really, really nice looking shoe. But that pair didn't even sell out in Europe. Like it was literally sitting. So some of these heavy hitting collaborators from the past, their newer stuff isn't really, you know, hitting with consumers like they used to. And I think it's just because overall, it's quite possible that we're getting a bit fatigued with New Balance, and maybe they're just peaking a bit in, or maybe they have already peaked and they're kind of on the decline phase right now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and nice that you brought it up as well. I think it's okay that they're peaking or that they're past their peak, because like you said, that's the normal trend and hype cycle. It's been a while. They've been hot for a very long time. Nobody can sustain that forever. And, you know, there's always competition. ASICS is on the come up. Trends move and shift. We're talking about 2000s runners. We're talking about, you know, Adidas Samba and Gazelle being in, people being more into maybe generally sneakers and sneakers that are a little bit more affordable. New Balance, like you said, is usually on the higher end of the price spectrum, which, you know, is fair because the quality is usually better than other brands. But yeah, I would agree with everything you've said, and that we are probably coming close to the end of New Balance's dominance. Which is exciting because it opens up the field to other players to kind of take that crown. Like I said, ASICS was big last year. A lot of people crowned them as their brand of the year. So I'm excited to see what comes. But that's the nature of the game. This is what happens all the time, you know?
Yeah, totally. Caught, no, I don't.
That's totally fine.
I don't think it's a bad thing either. I think it's good. I mean, now it's a lot easier to get New Balance sneakers. I know a lot of these New Balance collectors who were collecting New Balances way before they got popular, they were complaining about the last 3 years. You know, it was really tough for them to get shoes. So good for them now. You know, they'll be able to get stuff a lot easier, and just good for sneakerheads in general. It's always nice to be able to get a shoe you want pretty easily, and even better if you're able to get it on sale. So I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily. But yeah, guys, those are two of the big trends we've noticed. You had the 2000 runners. I had New Balance potentially peaking. As usual, we're going to close off the episode with the upcoming drops for the next 2 weeks, and I'll quickly run through them. The day we're filming this episode is actually June the 9th, so earlier this morning, the Wales Bonner Sambas dropped round 2 or round 3, I don't remember, but there was this new buck pair, which was yellow and brown, and the one that had everyone's attention, including mine, was that silver pair, all over metallic silver. What did you think of that Samba, by the way?
Yeah, it looks super nice, but it's also, I found it too much, and also like it's gonna crease like a mother.
Yeah, that's, I'm concerned about the creasing, I'm not gonna lie. I did manage to win a raffle for them in my size, and I think I'm gonna keep them because I don't have any shoes that look like that, and I always like to get, you know, different kind of stuff for my own closet. But yeah, that pair released earlier today. Also, another pair that released earlier today was the Stussy Nike Vandal High. There were three different colorways, once again done in that canvas type of material. I don't think those sold out though, so you should be able to still get them from the Stussy website. Tomorrow, June the 10th, we have this pair. So this is the Jordan 1 Washed Heritage. This is a perfect example of a pair that, if it released 3 years ago during the peak of the Jordan 1 hype cycle, you'd be seeing huge resale prices for a super clean colorway like this. I think it's a great, great colorway. Definitely one of those, you can wear them all the time, every day type of colorways. Great pair, Jordan 1 Washed Heritage. I'll try to cop one for myself. On the 14th, we have the Nike Dunk Low collab with Clot and Fragment. This pair originally released just on the Clot website, but now it's a more of a worldwide release on sneakers. A really, really nice pair. This is another pair that I saw a lot of people rocking in Japan. Clot and Fragment, of course, pretty big brands over there. On the 16th, we have the Air Max 86. Yeah, that big bubble Air Max dropping in the blue safari colorway. I think this pair looks actually really nice. It's on the sneakers app. And then finally, yeah, I want to ask your opinion about this before we close off. On June 21st, we have the Jacques Mousse J-Force 1. And if you guys have seen the shoe, it is a combination of an Air Force 1 and the, what's that shoe called? The
Footscape.
The Footscape, right. It's got a Footscape bottom. What did you think of this pair?
Yeah. Nah. The Air Force One's so good. Like, why mess with it in that way, you know? So I'm all for creativity, and it is a creative shoe, but nah.
I'm for creativity as well, but I don't think they thought too much about functionality here with this shoe, because having the knit on the sole like that, like, dude, just think about how dirty this shoe is going to get. Like, the mud, stones, little things like that going into those little grooves, right, of the shoe. I just think it's such an impractical shoe. Although I do think it looks interesting, don't get me wrong, but I find it just so impractical to actually wear. But yeah, that's also the last shoe to talk about, the Jacques Mousse J-Force 1 on June the 21st. But besides that, guys, thank you so much for tuning in once again to another episode of the Kickback Pod. As always, Fobs loves doing these with you. Looking forward to our next episode in 2 weeks. Hope you guys are enjoying your summer, by the way. And do not forget, if you enjoyed this episode, share it with your friend. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Music and Spotify, of course. That really, really helps us out. But most of all, share it with someone. Share it with someone that is interested in sneakers. That would mean the world to us. But other than that, guys, thank you so much for listening. JD signing out. Peace.
Fabian signing out. Peace.